Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
7:14 now. First off, the weather today is going to be pretty nice, especially compared to what it was a week ago. Highs today of 63, and then as you go into the week, highs of 66. Tomorrow, 74 on Thursday. Who'd have believed it after what we had last week? 70 for a high on Friday, 50% chance for showers in advance of another front. And then really no precipitation looking ahead. Saturday, 63, then Sunday, 68, 68, Monday, 69, Tuesday, 63, Wednesday, 72 on Thursday as we get closer to the Super Bowl. I'm getting some pushback on what I said earlier about President Trump and tariffs and Colombia. Ultimately, you can say it worked because, and again, you know, people are on all sides of this, but they wanted to send deportees back in a military plane. Colombia wouldn't accept the military planes. Trump threatened tariffs, and then they worked out a deal where they used Colombia planes to send the people back instead of military planes. So you can say it worked for both sides, really, in that I guess they didn't get the military planes in a Colombia, but Trump got what he wanted because he did get them to accept the deportees. So, again, you can nuance this however you like, and you can ask what the end goal was. Dub Lane joins us right now, our friend Walter Dub Lane, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at UNO, to talk about tariffs and how they work and what they are. How you doing, Dub?
Hey, good morning, Tommy.
There's a lot of nuance, a lot of politicking going on, a lot of negotiating going on. Let's start with tariffs, what they are. What is a tariff for people that maybe don't know?
Well, tariffs are a tax. Number one, just it's a tax on imported goods. And so they, for the most part, act like any other taxes do. They, you know, they raise the price to the consumer and the government gets some money.
So,
but it also simply, anytime you raise the price of something, you're discouraging people from buying that particular product. In this case, it would be the products that happen to be imported. Now, because it's only a tax on some of the goods, you know, if you're buying, I don't care, computers or clothing or whatever it is, and you only tax the ones that are imported, then, of course, that affects all prices a little bit, but it does, in some sense, the whole purpose of it, I mean, Trump's purpose of it is to say, well, then make the product in America and you won't get the tax. And so that's his emphasis. But the bottom line is a tax is a tariff is a tax, and it raises prices.
And I thought about you as I was watching one of the many speeches he gave last Monday, and that, when it came to tariffs, because he was talking about all the money that was going to be pouring into the U.S. Treasury, which may be true. But the question that I had that I wanted to ask you is, where's that money coming from?
U.S. customers, consumers. So it's, yes, it is going into the tariff, but it's into the U.S. Treasury, but it's coming from us. So it's just like any other tax.
So for people that say, no, that's not true, the other country's going to pay for it, explain that, please, if you will.
Well, if a tariff goes up, say, let's put you 10% tariff, the price doesn't automatically raise by 10%. In a competitive market, that's what you kind of expect to have. It could be that, for instance, the other company could eat the whole thing. They could pay the tariff and keep the price in the U.S. the same. That's, you know, up to them. It's an increase in their cost of production, effectively. And do they pass that along to consumers, or do they, you know, absorb it themselves? But depending on the market, they might absorb some portion of it. But it's in almost all markets, some of it will be passed on to the consumers, not necessarily 100%. But in what we can call a competitive market, it usually ends up being close to 100% that gets passed along.
So why then would President Trump think that this is a good idea? I can't put you inside of his head. But is this just a bargaining chip? Would he actually go through on this? Give me historical perspective on this, because one thing he also talked about was renaming Mount Denali in Alaska to Mount McKinley. Mount McKinley, President McKinley was a big tariffs guy. Take us through the historical, and I don't want you to get into the mountain thing, Dub, but take us through the, because I would be making a mountain out of a molehill. Let's talk about the tariffs, though, in McKinley, and historically what happened then.
Well, again, tariffs are a type of protectionism. That is, it's protecting American businesses against foreign competitors. Now, there's kind of two different ways typically to do that. One is with tariffs, and the other is with quotas, where you simply say, I mean, that's what we had. Remember when the Japanese, you know, cars first started coming in, they put quotas and say, no, you can only import 200,000, you know, Toyotas into the country in any given year. And that's one way of keeping the things out. And that's what McKinley and other people have done, again, to protect American businesses. And many times they're, you know, these are tariffs that are focused, for instance, on like sugar. To talk to our Louisiana folks, that we want to protect the sugar fields in Louisiana, and so we tax foreign sugar from Mexico.
And seafood,
or
right?
We tax Vietnamese crawfish, yeah. Crawfish or shrimp to protect our shrimp and crawfish industries. So sometimes they're targeted like this, and sometimes they're more general against everything from a particular country. But that's the basic idea of why Trump would want to do it, is he wants to increase American jobs and create American particular industries.
All right, so let me take a break. We'll look at the big macro part of this when we come back, which is, okay, so you put tariffs on foreign goods to bring manufacturing back to the United States, which means by putting the tariff on the goods, it makes it as cost-effective to get goods in the United States. But when you look at it overall, what does it mean for prices? And again, I always bring up the example, you can comment on this when we come back. If you want to buy American, you can now. However, it's going to be cost a lot more. And if there was, I would suggest in the marketplace, and this might be the marketing department, more in economics than UNO, but if there was an appetite for American products, manufacturers could start building uniquely American products now and paying their people an American wage, a decent living wage to make these products. The problem is a shirt at Walmart would go from being maybe $12 to, we'll talk about that when we get back. 721 traffic now, WWL. 726, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Walter Dublane, our friend, associate professor of economics and finance in my alma mater, UNO. Doug, let me get to this, question quickly if I can from the text line. When exactly would a sending country pay the tariff to the U.S. Treasury? When the cargo ship arrives at the U.S. port before it leaves Colombia? Take me through that example, if you would.
When it arrives at the U.S. port, that's when they pay the tariff. And then, you know, we talked about who pays it. Obviously, they got to import it. They pay that tax. And then the question is, what price do they charge the U.S. Consumers as to who actually ends up, you know, bearing the cost of that tariff?
So let's make an example here. And Jordan Fiegel, our producer, sent me this. Let's say Tucker Corporation selling widgets for $100 that's made in China. Tariffs go up 25%. So that means I do what after that? What's going to happen economically after that? And what would it take for Tucker Corporation to start making widgets in the United States rather than China?
Well, again, if the tariffs come in immediately, the first thing the Chinese company has to do is decide, well, what price? I mean, we've been selling it, when you say at $100, how much is their cost? So, you know, typically, let's suppose their cost was $80 and they sell it here for $100 to get the profit. Now they have to have another $25 worth of cost. Well, do they raise the price to $125, or do they, lower their profits by 10 and only raise it to $115. That's a strategic decision.
Let me jump in for a second. Let's say I'm importing this, Tucker Corporation. I'm importing widgets from China. They charge me $80. 25% tariff goes on. Is there enough profit built into what China's charging Tucker Corporation for them to eat the tariff and still sell it to me for what they're selling it to? They would have to lower their profits or not? Thoughts?
No, I don't know anybody that works at that
margin,
that big of a margin.
Okay.
So they would, you know, they might be able to eat part of it, but certainly not all. Not when you're talking about 20 or 25% or even 10% tariffs. So
let's say 25%. That would raise the price of the widget to $125 here, and then the idea would be, well, can I then afford to have the widget manufactured in the United States and sell it for $125? And I know we're just throwing numbers around here, but it goes to the differential in the price of labor between the United States and the Pacific Rim. Thoughts?
Yeah, and so, you're right. At that point, at $125, and the American companies say, well, man, I can sell it for that. Mm-hmm. And so they start doing it. And so, yes, we get jobs in the United States, but who pays for those? It's the consumer that's paying $125 instead of $100.
But when
$115 or whatever the number actually is.
When it comes to the labor differentials, the prices in labor between the United States and the Pacific Rim, would 25% do it or not? I know we're talking about just average numbers here, but I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I haven't seen the actual, you know, numbers. I know it's a fairly substantial amount. It's enough to make it worthwhile for American companies, you know, to not make it themselves, but to buy from abroad because they can save. And again, many times saving, you know, 5 or 8% is still certainly something you would want to do. You don't have to have 25% cost savings.
When it comes to shirts like that you get for $11 at Walmart that are made in Vietnam, do you have any idea, or I don't mean to catch you flat-footed here, Doug, because we didn't invite you on for this, but what the average wage in Vietnam is for making shirts or other
Pacific Rim countries? On the other hand, it would probably be about 25 or 30% of what we pay our workers. So it's a fairly substantial difference.
So you would have to have a 75% increase in labor costs, if I'm hearing you right, to manufacture them here. Accurate?
Something like that, yeah. Especially for those type of, again, things like clothing where your big expense is the labor. You know, now there's also other, you know, manufactured goods where, now this is the place, you know, we talked about when might it be appropriate to have tariffs? Well, again, if the country is subsidizing, in other words, they cost them $100 to produce the product, but then they sell it in the U.S. for $80 because for whatever political reasons they want to do exports and things of that sort, then tariffs, you know, because they're subsidizing the product, then a tariff sometimes is appropriate. And that's why we believe that in terms of not only their actual subsidies of many of the companies, because the Chinese companies many times are state government enterprises, they can kind of pick whatever they want to do for political reasons instead of economic reasons. So I think there are legitimate places to use tariffs if you believe that the country is subsidizing that and selling it below cost. Or as again, what we just saw with the Colombians now, where you're doing it as a strategy for political reasons. You know, I don't think that doesn't work worldwide. It happens to work on a case by case basis. But I would do want to say there are times when tariffs do make some sense. I'm just saying across the board tariffs, as Trump was proposing, don't make sense, because the other part of it is, remember, we said we want to create American jobs in those industries. Well, we also sell a lot of goods to that country, and they're going to respond with reciprocal tariffs on our products, and then we'll lose our jobs here producing for our exports. We'll gain one industry, lose in another industry.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it. Quickly to news, WWL.
Anyway, Colonel Jessup.
You got them both. Movie. From a few, what is it, a few good men, a few angry
men? Few good men.
There you go. No, thank you, Jimmy. Nice job. And again, it was an exhibition, not a competition. No prizes. We have connected with Eric Smith, who is, of course, a professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy. Morning, Professor. How are you?
I'm fine. Sorry I'm late.
No worries. We had time to play a little game of Who Are You and have some fun. Let's talk about President Trump and Drill Baby Drill. He says, and I want to start with this, America will be a manufacturing nation. Once again, we have something no other manufacturing nation will ever have, the largest amount of oil and gas of any country on earth. And as soon as I heard him say this last week, I thought, well, I got to ask Professor Smith about that. Is that a true statement? Is it?
It is, okay. In terms of production, not in terms of reserves. But we do have a significant amount of oil and gas production, and I think with the change of administration, at least in the short term, you're going to see great improvements here in Louisiana, mostly because we'll be able to put in the pipelines and the additional infrastructure like new LNG export terminals that we really need to maintain our exports. As far as long term, I think perhaps the administration needs to think a little bit more about this tariff business, because there's not an economist on earth, maybe there's one, but most of the economists, certainly the majority, think the tariffs are regressive. They basically reduce the potential for world trade. And then if you want to go really long term, you would say that reducing world trade has a tendency to create wars. So I guess I'd give him, a B-plus for the first week in office or whatever. But I think the short term is that we're going to get more of the stuff built that we've been trying to get built, and we'll get rid of the pauses on LNG and the rest of that stuff.
So when it comes to the tariffs, I think that could be just saber-rattling, right?
Well, I mean, he's a transactional president, and he makes no bones about it. He would say the same thing, I think. And he wants, all of these long-term relationships we have, especially with our allies, never mind China, but, his view would be, why should you continue to pay all of the money for NATO and get nothing for it? So if you want us to pay for NATO, then buy more of our products.
So when it comes to production and capital investment as it relates to, like you said, LNG, and I know at some point I want to ask you about oil not being oil and what we refine in the gasoline here, but how anxious are oil companies going to be? How does the business work in terms of capital investment when you got maybe a policy that could change in 4 years again? That's what worries me, Professor. Or concern.
We would look forward to a 4-year time frame. I think the problem is when policy changes within 4 months after you've made an investment that's going to take 30 years to get repaid.
Well, but even after 4 years, if it's going to take 30 years, if
that's right. I mean, saying it's only worse when it's shorter term. I think that there's a certain amount of investment that's going to go on anyway. And it's a little bit like if you go to the prior administration and you see all of the efforts they made to discourage oil and gas production and consumption, and worldwide, production increased and consumption increased. So, it's a little bit of a case of sort of a top-down management structure worldwide where people want, they have good intentions, they want to see air improvements and all the rest of it, and our air is some of the cleanest around, incidentally, but nevertheless, it's a top-down theory, and it hits people in their pocketbooks immediately, and they don't see the benefits until 20, 30 years from now, so they're not real happy with those restrictions, and that's, I think, part of the reason why Trump became president.
So that's what I'm wondering about, though, in terms of capital investment when it comes to oil companies. Some of it's going to happen anyway, but how hesitant would they? Here's the deal, Professor. I don't know from beans, okay? I'm just a West Bank guy, but I would think if I'm in charge of one of these companies, like, okay, you're going to invest $100 million in this. Well, I don't know. Not if I can't use it in 4 years from now. If somebody gets in and I can't use it, how immune is capital investment from something like that? Or how demoralizing could it be, discouraging could it be to companies that are willing to make capital investment?
Well, I think it could be very discouraging, but I guess I would point to a couple of cases here in Louisiana where companies like IMTT and PVF, the refining company down in Chalmette, have spent huge amounts of money gearing up to be able to do a little of everything. So if you want renewable diesel in California, they'll make that for you. If you want regular diesel in Louisiana, they'll make that as well.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time and the insights as always. We're going to take a break. We come back. Have you gotten a text message?